Welcome to the Doeg episode. We will be, if we get through Doeg, we're going to talk about David. But first, Doeg. And this shir is dedicated by Alina Meyer in memory of her father, Yitzhak Elazar ben Mordechai Zichrono Lebracha, whose yahrzeit was the 5th of Cheshvan, and by Jenny Nussbaum, Lili Nishmas, her father, Yisrael ben Avram. Her husband, Yisrael ben Avram Zichrono Lebracha, Israel Weinstock, and the yahrzeit is the 8th of Cheshvan. That's today, yeah. Well, both neshamos should have an aliyah.
Can I add another dedication?
Sorry?
Can I add another dedication?
Yeah.
I'd like to dedicate it to the quick and complete recovery of my little grandson who has COVID.
Oh, my.
He's doing very well. He's feeling good. But I just want complete recovery with no...
Yeah.
So,
you should have a refuah shleima. What's his Hebrew name?
Tovia Eli Chai Ben Nechama Meira.
Tovia Eli Chai Ben Nechama Meira. Okay, you should have a refuah shleima. So, last time we talked about David's quest for food, specifically bread, in Nov, and we talked about which bread he got. The apparent meaning of the text is that he gets lechem hapanim, the showbread. We did note the alternative approach from the Radak's father, that it was from a karban toda, bread from a thanks offering, and we went through the verses and tried to show the basis for each one and how each one would deal with it. And then, in Chaf Aleph Chet, chapter 21, sentence 8, we found out that Doeg was present. And not only that, as we said at the end last time, David knows that Doeg is present, which is something we're going to have to grapple with, because Doeg is close with Shaul. How close he is depends on whom you read, but that's what we're going to find out now. Doeg is there. We had that odd word in the sentence, he was ne'etzar before God, which basically all the explanations we gave more or less said he had been there for some form of ritual gathering. Perhaps he's still engaged in a ritual. We had that one view that it's Shabbos and he's stuck there for Shabbos, and that was Netzar. Yes, Ricky.
Is there any indication of how long after David's arrival did Doeg show up, or was he?
Doeg was there before David got there. Doeg is described as having been there before. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So,
right, like we had Doeg before, though. This is not
so, we're talking about that. We'll get there.
Oh,
we will get
okay.
there. Don't worry. So, there's going to be a lot that we have to talk about with Doeg. Like I said, this entire session may be devoted to Doeg. We'll have to see. Malbim notes that Achimelech must know that Doeg is there. Right? Achimelech also has to be aware that that Doeg is present. Take a look at source number one. This is really important. I think the sentence I was in the middle of before was that Doeg is described in the text as Abir Haroim, the mightiest shepherd of Shaul. And as we're going to see, there are different ways to explain those words. But he's definitely close to Shaul. And now look what the Malbim says. He says, HaKohen lo nishmar mipnei Doeg shehayasham. The Kohen didn't become guarded because Doeg was there. Achimelech doesn't seem to care. V'zelos shakohen lo ala alibo ki boreachu. That demonstrates that it doesn't even occur to him that David is a fugitive. As far as Achimelech is concerned, David is on a mission from Shaul, and so who cares if Doeg is here? That won't cause any problems at all. This would be consistent with what we said back in chapter 20, when we're talking about David being absent from the palace during the meal on Rosh Chodesh, and David felt that he would be missed if he wasn't at the palace for the meal. And we said, why would he be missed? He's on the run. The answer is not everybody is aware that David is on the run. Not everybody is aware that Shaul wants to kill him. On the other hand, I should note an opposing view. Rav Bazak Rabbi Noam Bazak thinks that Achimelech does know that something is up between David and Shaul and is actually scared to help. And we'll see that when we get to the language that Achimelech uses, talking about the sword and giving it to David. He suggests that Achimelech hesitates to give it because he knows that there's something wrong between Shaul and David. But that's certainly not the simple read of the psukim, of the text. So we're going to talk a lot more about Doeg. I want to come back to his title as, you know, Big Shepherd. One thing that bothers me and I don't have an answer for is that we first read about David getting food. We're going to read about David's weapon. And we throw in the mention of Doeg's presence in between. You could have mentioned Doeg's presence before you mentioned the food. You could have mentioned it after the sword. You chose to mention it in between. And I was wondering if it might be because it's showing up after the bread help to say, look, he witnessed what happened with the bread and then he witnesses everything else going forward. Or because of what's coming next, because it's, he's going to see the sword and that's really the big threat, is David getting a weapon. Maybe that's what it's about. Unclear. I don't know. I haven't seen any commentators pick up on it either. Yes, Leona, save me from my ignorance.
I'm not so concerned about that. I'm a little confused about something else.
Yeah.
Which is, initially, David tells Achimelech that he is on a special mission of the king.
Yep.
And that he, no man is supposed to know about this. He's to keep this quiet.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, not only is Doeg there, but he's visible to David and David to them. Now, even though he's supposedly a confidant, maybe not a confidant, but a valued member of the king's court as his top shepherd or what, it seems that Achimelech should be a little concerned if he's already told him this is a secret mission, nobody's supposed to know about it. That means even other members of the king's court, perhaps.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the answers that you can give are straightforward, whether they're correct or not, I can't say. Right, one possibility is that he is playing it straight. In other words, he's saying, look, I can't tell that guy over there about my mission, so don't say anything to him. You know, that kind of thing. He can know, Doeg can know that the secret agent exists. He knows that David exists. He can't know why David is there. That's really, you know, that's an answer you can give, and there are similar answers that you could give. But it is interesting that you know, this interplay between secret mission and the presence of Doeg. Ricky and then Bonita.
Did David notice Doeg before he asked for the bread? Could be he asked for the bread, he notices Doeg, and he asked for a sword.
So, unclear. If you go back to the sentences we read at the end last time, chapter 22, sentences 21 and 22, I don't believe that we can tell based on there. David simply says to Abiatar, I knew that day that he was there and that he would tell Shaul. He doesn't say how he, you know, at what point he became
aware. It makes sense that all of a sudden David notices Doeg and then he says, okay, I need a weapon.
So maybe it's thrown in here because this is when he notices Doeg. Could be. It didn't say that, but it could be. Bonita.
The order is
right.
Bread, Doeg, weapon.
Right, could be. Bonita, you were going to say? You're muted. I can't hear you. All right. So, We're going to come back to talk more about Doeg. I just want to get through the sword part first.
You hear me now?
Yes, I hear you now.
Okay. So I'm just thinking that it's weird to me that if David is on a mission, that he wouldn't be taking a sword.
So except that he was sent very quickly enough that he doesn't have food.
Doesn't matter. You won't leave without your shoes. A soldier doesn't leave without a sword.
Yes and no.
Would he have his sword with him?
What's David's history with swords? David's not a swordsman.
Only Saul and Jonathan have swords.
Well, that was true way back when. Right, that was true in an earlier war with the Plishtim. At this point, I don't think that's true anymore. But David has rejected swords, which is part of the conversation I want to get to, is now he suddenly wants one. We're going to talk about that. Linda, you were going to say that?
No, I just wanted to know, do we know if Doeg knows that David is in trouble?
We will find out that Doeg knows.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a lot to ask here, but let's look at the next two sentences. Chapter 21, sentences 9 and 10. Psukim Tet and Yud. Vayomer David la'achimelech. David says to Achimelech, Ve'in yesh po tachas yadcha, chanit o charev. He says to him, might there be ve'in, according to Rashi, is to be read like if. Radak says it should be read as no, like ain. He's saying isn't there. So either if there might be here or isn't there here beneath your hand, a lance, a spear, a sword, something. The other read for in is that in Aramaic, in means yes. But I haven't seen the commentators suggest that here. So he says, you might have a sword around here. Ki gam charbi v'gam kelai lo lakachti biyadi, he says to Bonita. I didn't take my sword. I didn't take my equipment. Ki ayad bar hamelech nachutz. Because the king's word was urgent. I needed to get out of town. I needed to get going. And therefore, I didn't have time to grab anything. He just told me to go, and that's what I did. That's what David says to him. Vayomer ha-kohen. So the Kohen, Achimelech, it's funny that we identify him suddenly as the Kohen, I don't know why that is, says to him, Cherub Golias ha-plishti asher hikisa be'emek ha-elah. That sword of Goliath the Philistine, the one you struck in Emek ha-elah, back in Perek Yud Zayin in chapter 17, hine hi luta vasimla acharei ha-efod. There are a few different ways to take that sentence, or that clause in the sentence. Luta is to be wrapped, to be covered. If you remember from Rus, Vatavo Balat, we actually saw a few chapters ago, Balat, it means to be in hiding or in secret. So it is hidden, it's all wrapped up, and he says, where is it? Acharei ha'efod. So acharei ha'efod has two approaches. Either it means acharei means behind, physical acharei, or it's timing acharei, it's after. Either one is a legitimate translation. If you say it's behind, so the ephod would usually be assumed to refer to one of the big day kahuna, one of the garments worn by the Kohen. And that's what Radak and Ralbach say here, it's behind the place where we keep the ephod. That's where this sword is. Alternatively, Radak suggests maybe it's about the Kohen's personal garment. It's right behind where I keep my stuff. That's where this sword of Goliath is. Whereas if I take ephod to mean after in terms of timing, then it's after David asked a question of the ephod. And I need to insert information here. In chapter 22, Doeg is going to report to Shaul that David was in Nov and at the Mishkan. And he's going to tell him that David asked questions of the Urim v'Tumim, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. He asked God for advice. We don't see that in this chapter. However, says Rashi, acharei ha'efod means after asking the ephod for advice. So what he said to David was, the sword is here. After David inquired of the ephod. That would be the way to read the sentence. It's a little bit tight in terms of how that works, nonetheless. But he says to David, im osati kach lecha kach. If you want it, take it. And that's where Rav Meidan reads the hesitation, right? That's not an enthusiastic, oh, take this sword. That's, if you want it, go ahead. Kiena cheres zulasa, because we don't have any other ones bazeh here. Vayomer David ein kamoha tnen ali. David says, of course I want it. There's nothing like that sword. Give it to me. Absolutely. You bet. I want the sword. You follow? Yes, Claudette.
Is it possible that David knew all along that the sword was there and he wanted it?
Is it possible that Saul knew that it was there?
David
knew that it was there. Right, so I want to, right, so so hang on, because I'm coming to that question. The first problem that I have here is, why is this sword in the Mishkan? Right? Leona shaking her head, yeah, because we don't keep, like, the Mizbeach, the altar can't use stones that were hewn, that were cut with a sword.
It's never mentioned when he slays, I look back.
Yeah.
He slays the Goliath when he cuts off his head with the sword. It never says, first of all, it says, it is his sword. It says, Vitach et harbo.
Yeah.
And he took his own sword, and this is the
No. David doesn't have a sword. It's explicit in that chapter. It's the sword of Goliath. He took Goliath's sword. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's explicit in that chapter. We're going to come back to that, probably not this week, but next week, that David had no sword in that story. So there is a sword of Goliath. It's an impressive sword. If you go back earlier in chapter 17, you get this whole description of his sword. But what in the world is this doing in the Mishkan? This ain't the Weaponry Hall of Fame. Yes, Susan. Yeah?
I was just waiting. Because here it was, a miracle happened. Like, they thought of David beating Goliath was really, you know. And if it wasn't, if it was from a chef, they would keep it as a reminder. And the only place that seemed to, and not saying it's a museum, but that was the congregational place, would be the Mishkan.
Right.
So that would be a place to store it.
So, a similar idea, almost what you're saying, but similar. Take a look at source number two, Radak. Lefisha isa ba'ohel moed lezikaron hanes. It's there in the Mishkan to commemorate the miracle. Kamosha Pirashti, he says, as I have explained, maybe he said it back in chapter 17, I don't recall it. Lo haya beretzon Achimelech lotzia misham im haisa shama acheres. And Achimelech says, we don't have any other to offer you because he wants it there to commemorate the miracle. He doesn't want it to go out. I have a problem with this explanation. What's wrong with saying it's there to commemorate the miracle?
It was covered.
Yeah. You have it wrapped up in an area, and not only is it wrapped up, it's behind where we keep the clothing. Like, you know, you want, if this is really a trophy that, you know, the world should see, then it should be on display, not hiding. I don't understand. Unless, like, they took it out for special occasions for Goliath's Yahrzeit. Like, I don't really follow why this is all wrapped up. Yes, yeah, Susan.
I think the Mishkan was, I mean, we killed animals and stuff, but somehow it was a place of God. Maybe the sword was kept to remind that they knew it was there. But because it is a violent weapon, it represents violence, it wasn't like what we have today on display. People knew it was there, but it wasn't a violent, they didn't want it to be violent, but to remember that this miracle happened.
That's interesting. So it's there, but we want to squelch the violence aspect of it, and therefore we keep it covered. I hear that. It sort of reminds me, if you've been at weddings of Hasidim, I think. I don't know if it's only Hasidim, because I've seen it by non-Hasidim also, where the chassan walks down with a kittel covered by a raincoat. You know, on the one hand, he carries the message of the kittel and all of its significance, but on the other hand, it's not there for everybody to see. So I wonder if it isn't sort of like that, especially if you take the negative view of the kittel, that it's a grief thing. So you don't want it to be out there in the open for the wedding. There are two different ways to look at a kittel. But
what's a
kittel? The kittel is the white garment, simple white garment that a chassan wears it usually under the chuppah. It's often worn on Yom Kippur. Some wear it on Rosh Hashanah, Seder night as well. And it's supposed to also be like the tachrichim, the shrouds that someone is buried in. So, yeah. The word kittel, I assume, was Yiddish, but I don't actually know. Chana?
The sword covered reminds me actually of covering the challah knife when you stay in the bachur. Mm-hmm. It's the same, it's there, but it's not visible, so it's not really visible.
Right. It's there, but it's not there. On the other hand, if that's really true, though, if we're keeping it covered, then Achimelech shouldn't worry about giving it away, because he could just tell everybody it's still there. Who's going to know? This is, you know, it stays back there behind the ephod. Linda and then Bonita.
Now, I would think it's very strange that the sword is there, and I think it could be there for other purposes. Maybe Achimelech is in some kind of subterfuge where he needs to have a weapon nearby.
Protection of the Mishkan. This is our
protection of the Mishkan or protection of himself.
It's an interesting idea. If I were him, knowing the size of Goliath's sword, I would take something a little more usable, a little more useful. This is the Goliath version. Bonita, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I would say maybe it's precious to him.
Precious to whom?
It is.
To whom?
To
Achimelech. Why?
Because it's some kind of a symbol.
Mm-hmm. So as that symbol could be.
And so it doesn't sound like he really wants to give it to him. He's like, he doesn't give it to him in his face and say, here, go.
Right. Now that's the reluctance, which I want to come back to. Janine and then Leona, and then I want to go further because there's a lot more to be said here.
I think that Radakis, he speaks in Parag Yitzayim, Pasuk Nun Dalet, where it says that, talking about David, that he loves something or Allah, and he says, first of all, but it also could be that it would be all Moed.
Yeah.
He said that specifically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Nun Dalet.
Okay, thank you very much. And Leona.
I'm just confused a little bit because it doesn't seem like David knew that David's sword was in with Achitophel. He didn't know that.
So I'm going to come to that in one moment.
It seems to me anyway, because he doesn't know that he didn't bring it there.
Hang in there. I'm coming to that. I wanted to offer one other thought for why this is in the Mishkan, aside from being public display to commemorate the miracle. We have a long-standing practice in Tanakh that Jews did, and that all the nations that we encountered, or many of them at any rate, are recorded as doing. And that is when you defeat an enemy, you take a trophy of theirs and you put it in your holy place, right? If you remember from the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the Plishtim took the Aron and they put it in front of Dagon. In Shmuel Bet, we find that David defeats Ammon and he takes the crown off of their idol and he puts the crown on his own head. We find, of course, the most famous example, the Babylonians take the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, and Nebuchadnezzar puts them in the house of his god with his idols. So there's a long-standing practice. You could argue that this also goes back to Shechem, when Shimon and Levi kill out the people of Shechem and they take spoils, and then after that Yaakov has to say to them, get rid of the idols you took. Why did they have idols? It was a trophy. So so I wonder if this isn't seen as a trophy also, and therefore it's put specifically with God to say the victory is with God. That's what you're doing. You're crediting God with the victory. I haven't seen any of the commentators say it, but to me it seems very, very clear that that's why it was there. So Now I come back to Leona's question. If David knows that this is there, and certainly Radak thinks, as Janine just pointed out, that David knows that this is there, and certainly if you take the view that it's supposed to be there to commemorate the miracle for the entire nation, so everybody's supposed to know that this is there. So why didn't David just come to him and say, would you please give me the sword? Right? He says, you know, I don't have a weapon, and could I get a weapon? I couldn't take my weapon. Like, you know Goliath's sword is there. Just say to him, Achimelech, would you give me Goliath's sword? You know, Achimelech's not going to say to you, go fish. Like, everybody knows that the thing is there. So I think it's because he knows Achimelech is going to be reluctant. He knows Achimelech isn't going to want to give it to him. So he needs Achimelech to come to the realization on his own that this is the only option. There is no other way. He needs Achimelech to do. So he says to Achimelech, is there a weapon here? Tell me, what are my options? And then Achimelech has come back to him and say, well, all we have is the Goliath sword. That to me is logical. But let's talk now about Achimelech's reluctance. We've seen one explanation for the reluctance already, and that was Rav Meidan's approach, that he suspects that there's a falling out between David and Shaul. I find that to be difficult. But I also don't understand David's response. When David says to him, there's none like it. Like, what was that about? Yes, it's true there's none like it. I mean, yeah, let's go back and see, because I keep referring to the description. We should actually read the description. Go back to chapter 17, right? Perek Yud Zayin. And we described all of the armor of Goliath, right? Chapter 17, sentence 4, sentence 5, the sentence 6, and then sentence 7 talks about the blade of his spear. You know what? It actually doesn't mention his sword. At this stage, it doesn't mention the sword. Only later does it mention his sword. That's very interesting. David is going to be the one who's going to mention the sword of Goliath when he faces him. When we're going to come back to this sentence eventually. But if you jump ahead in chapter 17 to sentence 47. Actually, even before that, sentence 45, where David says to him, you come to me with Cherev, Chanit, and Kidon, right? And I come to you with God. And then again, in sentence 47, he says, God doesn't save people with Cherev and Chanit, a sentence which is going to matter to us probably next week. But, okay, Achimelech seems to be reluctant. David says, there's nothing like it. How do we understand that exchange? So I'm going to offer you three approaches. Radak, in number 3, source number 3 on the sheet, I just gave it to you as a table rather than bring each one's commentary and all of that. Radak's first approach is to say, if, and I capitalize the word if you want it, take it. Meaning, Achimelech does not want David to take it because it's there to commemorate the miracle. That's the way Radak understands why it's in the Mishkan. It's there to commemorate the miracle. So if you want it, I can't stop you. But I'd rather you didn't take it. To which David responds, it's the best option. There's nothing like it. That's the best sword. Of course I want it. That's one take. Abar Benel offers two other approaches. For both approaches, he emphasizes not the if you want it, but if you want it. There's something about David. First, he says, no one else should take it because it's here to commemorate the miracle. But if you want it, you're the one who killed Goliath, you have a right to take it. To which David says, well, it's a great sword. So, yeah, I want it. You follow the difference? And then Abarbanel's second approach, our third idea here in the table, is he's saying, and this is an interesting idea. It's one of those things Abarbanel says that you wonder how much of it just comes from his era. Abarbanel floats the idea that there's a superstition surrounding a weapon if the holder of the weapon was killed while holding it. In other words, there's something wrong with this sword. It sort of reminds me of like Harry Potter and wands and stuff. Like it's dangerous to pick up the sword that the previous holder was killed. So Abarbanel says, no one should take this sword, says Achimelech, because a sword whose holder is killed has a curse on it. If you think it's okay, like you're willing to dare, alright, then take it. But you're putting yourself in harm's way. And David's response is not just, it's a great sword, but it's a great sword for me. Because I already had a miracle happen for me with it. I'm the guy who killed Goliath. So I'm not worried about any curses. I'm good with this. Yes, Leona.
I like all these. Although, going back to 17, on the 54, Vayikach David et Rosh HaPlishti, Vayivel Ola Yerushalayim, Ve'et Kela Sam Ve'ahalot.
Yeah, that was what Janine was reading the Radak on before.
Okay. Well, what's...
That Ahalot could be a reference... And the answer is that either Ahalo, his ohel, doesn't mean his personal tent. Because remember, David didn't have a tent. David doesn't have a tent. David just showed up at the battlefield. David was living at home. So that's one take, is that it means the Mishkan. An alternative take is that he kept it in his tent going forward, and eventually he got it to the Mishkan. We don't need to get all the details on the travels of Goliath's sword. So that would be the other approach. Yes, Susan.
I'm just troubled. We just said, Abimelech, that sword is very unwieldy. And I remember when we described David way back. He was ready, he wasn't big, he wasn't like a big strong soldier. And here we're saying that this sword is the sword of a giant. David was not a giant.
Do you remember what we read regarding David putting on Shaul's uniform?
Yes, it was big on him, God made it fit.
God made it fit, and we had a debate then. Is it that David grew or that it changed? It would seem that David has grown into it, and all I have in front of me at the end of the day is a story that says David took Goliath's sword. So clearly he thought he was going to be able to use it. How he got there is a good question.
Did you forget that he was a very strong man?
Yes, David is an Ish Gibor Chayo, we said.
Right, the Gibor Chayo, I thought, meant a brave soldier.
So we gave a lot of different explanations for what it could mean, but at the end of the day, this is the man who killed 200 Plishtim.
Right, so he adds up, yes, okay, and all the stuff with the lion and stuff.
Yeah, lions and bears and, yeah, no, don't mess with David.
But and also my other question is, maybe you're going to come to it, but when we've seen Doeg before, we know he's a bad guy.
We're getting to Doeg. I'm not answering any questions about Doeg yet. Okay. Yes, Janine.
Could there be a more innocuous explanation in Kamoa? There isn't another one, so give me that one, even though it's meant to commemorate something.
But then you would say Ein Acher. He doesn't say that.
But
there's nothing like it, is what he says.
Excuse me.
The words are, there's nothing like it. He would use the same words that Achimelech used. Achimelech said Ein Acher
et Zulatan. I don't
know. Yeah, I don't know. Ein Kamoha sounds to me like Ein Kamoha. So let's talk Doeg. Before Susan explodes with curiosity here. What do we know about Doeg? So first thing to know, when you look back at sentence 8, is that he's not named Doeg. What is he named?
Ha-Edomi.
Doeg Ha-Edomi. Edomi, Edom, right, is another name for Esav. So the general approach, as Radak says it here, is that he lived in the land of Edom. Not that he's an Edomite. He's a Jew. In the same way that we will see Urya Hachiti and Itai Hagiti, it doesn't mean that they are, Chiti and Plishti. It means they lived in that land. However, we are going to see later on some who are going to make a fascinating connection. Who else in our story is not quite named Edomi, but something that sounds similar? Exactly. David is the Admoni. So we're going to come back to that. Not yet, but we're getting there. He is also called Abir Haroim. Abir Haroim, he is the mightiest shepherd. So, simple read is what Radak says right off the bat. It means he's the chief shepherd, right? If you take a look at source number 4, Gedol Ro'eh HaMikneh Asher LeShaul UMimuneh Alehem, the greatest of Shaul's shepherds, and he is appointed over them. Right? That's the idea. It's a little odd, because the term Abir, right, mighty, is not really a term, even though shepherds had to be strong, they had to fend off, animals and all of that. Nonetheless, like, Abir is like a mighty warrior. It's kind of funny to see that with shepherd. I will note for you, that Doeg, as we're going to see, is a very bad man. He is going to murder all the people of Nov, except one who's going to get away. So, like, Doeg is a very bad man. He fits on a list of people who had some kind of status as, you'll see in a moment. Take a look at source number 5. Look at the list. Mishnah and Sanhedrin. This Mishnah is talking about people who don't make it into Olam Haba, who don't make it into the next world. And we've got Bilam, Doeg, Achitofel, and Gehazi. All of these are people who had some standing and association with a king and went bad. So they wasted or abused their position. There's actually a medrash in Avos Rabbi Nassan which calls them the Mevakshei Gedulah. They sought power. It also throws in Cain and Korach on that list, which is interesting. Ricky?
Was it Esav Admoni also? Is there a connection there?
So, yes, he is Admoni. And we talked about that with David originally.
Right.
And Esav is named Edom.
So is there a connection there to Doeg?
Not yet, but maybe. Yes.
You said shepherds don't have to be that strong.
I did not say they don't have to be that strong. I said they are strong. They fight off animals and all of that. But the term Abir is really more of a warrior term than being strong enough to fend off lions and bears.
Because I thought with David, we said how strong he was and all of that.
Yep.
And he was also a warrior.
Yep, all true.
So, is there a comparison of negative possibly dummy knowing?
Maybe. So, even though Radak offers us the idea that it simply means he's the chief shepherd, the Gemara takes it in a different direction, noting that a ro'eh for us is very often not a shepherd of animals, but rather a herder of people, a leader of people.
Oh.
If you take a look at source number 6, Gemara in Chagiga, plus mea boi bo doeg v'achitofel b'migdal haporeach ba'avir. Doeg and Achitofel asked 300 questions regarding a cabinet that is open to the air. That's an issue of Tuma and Tahara, of purity and impurity, being communicated if there's a dead body in a place and how is it communicated and all of that. We link Doeg here and in many of the sources with Achitofel. Can someone tell me in one sentence who Achitofel was? So Yes, Achitofel was a brilliant advisor of David, who went bad and advised Avshalom in his revolt against David. But Achitophel is same breed here. A person who's close to the throne, with a lot of power, who goes bad. But the Gemara here paints him, Doeg, as a scholar. Take a look at source number 7, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. They're commenting on a pasuk in Yeshaya. Aye sofer, aye shokel, aye sofer as hamigdalim. Where is the one who counts? Where is the one who receives or weighs? Where is the one who counts the towers? What in the world does that pasuk mean? Who are you referring to? Aye sofer kol osios shebetorah. Where is the one who counts all the letters in the Torah? Aye shokel, sheshokel kol kalim v'chamurim shebatorah. Where is the one who weighs all of the logical arguments in the Torah? Aye sofer es hamigdalim, and where is the one who counts the towers? What is that? Shaya sofer shlosh meos halachos psukos b'migdal ha-porech ba'avir. He counted 300 established laws regarding a cabinet open to the air. Who is this? This Gemara is talking about Doeg. And within the view, yes, Sandra.
Can we go back to Gehazi? Who is he?
So Gehazi was the lead servant of the prophet Elisha. And he is the one who, when Elisha cures Naaman, the non-Jewish general, of his tzaras, Gehazi runs after Naaman to go get payment for it, when Elisha specifically didn't want payment. That's Gehazi. And then he gets tzaras. There's a lot to his story also.
That's
who he is. It means wary. We're going to get to that. So if you take a look on your sheet at source number 8, tying into his identity as a Torah scholar, look what you see here in the Medrash on Tehillim. Doeg hu haya av Beis Din. He was the head of the rabbinical court for David. Shenamar, as it says, Abir haro'im asher l'Shaul, the mightiest of Shaul's shepherds, viewing the Sanhedrin, viewing the judges, as shepherds. They're shepherds of the population. Yes, Claudette, and then I think Bonita had something she wanted to say.
Maybe that is why David took the liberty of talking for Doeg before Abimelech, because he knows him to be this person who supposed to be in charge of Torah.
So that would be good, except that it's going to sound in chapter 22 like he knew that this was going to cause problems. It's not just that I knew he was there, but I knew that this was going to be dangerous. That he was going to tell Shaul. I mean, I guess you could say that knowing he'll tell Shaul doesn't mean he thinks he's a bad guy, just that why wouldn't he tell Shaul that David was there? Maybe. You can make the argument, I suppose. Bonita, you were going to say? No? Okay. So I want to go further with a Gemara, which will sound familiar and will finally take us back towards where Susan was before. Source number 9. Do you remember when David goes to fight Goliath? And Shaul says, who is this kid? Who's his father? Right? And we say there that his question is this guy from Peretz or from Zerach? Is he from the royal branch of the tribe of Yehuda? And then there's somebody who responds to him, saying to him, forget asking if he's from Peretz or Zerach, ask if he's even Jewish. Take a look, it's source number 9. Velo Yadale. The Gemara says, why is Shaul asking who David's father is? He knows him. Vaksiv. It told us right before that, in the previous chapter, when David was playing music for Shaul, Vayehavehu Ma'od. He loved him a lot. Vayelo no se kelim. He carried his implements. Ela a'avuha kamashil. Rather, he asked about David's father. He wanted to know where David's father is from. Da, da, da. And Amar le Doeg ha'edomi. Doeg of Edom said to him, Ad sha'ata mashil alav im hagun hu l'malchus im lav. Before you start asking about whether he's suitable to be a king, sha'al alav im ro'i lavo bakal im lav. Ask if he can even marry a Jew. My time of why? Deka'asi me'rus ha'moaviyah, because he comes from Ruth of Moab, and the question is she able to marry in? and so on. But Doeg is portrayed there as being involved in halachic disputes regarding the status of David. There's more. There's a lot more you can do with this, but I'm gonna hold off on going further on that line because there's a lot more to say on this topic. Yes, Janine.
I remember it bothering me at the time. You know, when David first came to Shaul, and it says one of the Naomi praised him. It was almost like he was trying to arouse Shaul's jealousy.
Yep, we're getting there.
And he gets a bad rap. I mean, they I don't remember who it was that said that was going. And I always wonder, like, how did they get that Nara was going?
Right, so you can look ahead at source number 11 if you like.
I'm sorry?
Janine, you can look at source number 11 if you like. Sorry, Hannah, what?
Isn't it because it says Achavim and Arim and cook their language?
So I want to go in order now because we've got 14 minutes to go. We have a lot to cover, and I'd like to answer some of these questions. I'm not going to give everything, but we've learned enough that people have all the clues for the questions, but I need to be able to give some answers. So first of all, support for the view that Doeg is not just a shepherd, but he's a leader of the nation. First of all, from the text itself. Go back to 21, sentence 8. Look at the way he's introduced. Is that the introduction you give to somebody who watches the animals? And there was someone from the servants of Shaul on that day, in a ritual gathering before God, and his name was Doeg of Edom, the mightiest of the shepherds of Shaul. The sentence itself gives him quite the grand introduction, but not just that. If you go further ahead to chapter 22, sentence 9, when he's going to talk to Shaul about David being at the Mishkan, right? This is right after Shaul accuses people of plotting with David. So Doeg says to him, Vayan Doeg Adomi. Doeg of Edom answered, Vahu nitzav al avdei Shaul. He was in charge of, stood over Shaul's servants, Vayomar, and he said, Ra'isias ben Yishai, I saw the son of Yishai came to know to Achimelech ben Achitub. And he asked of God, he inquired of God, that was what we talked about with the ephod, right? And we're continuing in sentence 10. And Achimelech gave him food, and Achimelech gave him the sword of Goliath. And then the king sends for Achimelech, right? And on the basis of Shaul's words, this massacre is going to take place. So, on the basis of Doeg's words, Doeg is somebody who is of standing. And David is going to say, I knew he was somebody of standing. I knew this was going to be a problem. So the text itself leads us in that direction. More, from the story itself, in terms of his presence at the Mishkan. You remember that we've said that he is at the Mishkan, but that others are not. Right? We said, why did David go to the Mishkan? You're a fugitive. Why would you go to a public place? And we noted that nobody's going to the Mishkan. Normal people didn't go to the Mishkan at that point. People could bring their sacrifices on private altars. The Aron isn't at the Mishkan either. So Doeg being there suggests that he is somebody of special standing such that he comes to the Mishkan. And I wonder also if the fact that Achimelech doesn't warn David that Doeg is around, it could be because he assumes whatever his secret mission is, Doeg must know. Because Doeg is that kind, he's not just in the court, he's somebody who would know what was going on. So the question now is, how do we understand what happens to Doeg? How do we understand that you could have somebody who is so high up and so important that is now going to massacre a city because that's what he's going to do. How do we understand? How do we grasp this? So if it weren't already 220, I would open it to you, but I'm not. I'm going to give you two approaches. One approach we already said back in chapter 16. The other approach I'm floating now. So the first approach, which we said back in chapter 16, is that Doeg seems like he is the Satan of Shaul. He is there in order to bring Shaul down. This goes all the way back to the war against Amalek and the way the Medrash saw him then. Take a look, please, on your sheet at source number 10. You remember that Shaul justified sparing the animals by saying, Ki yaresi es ha'am, right? I was afraid of the am. So look at source number 10 at the Medrash. Vayachmol Shaul veha'am al agad. Bar kapara amar zeddo eg. Sheyashakul kineged kol Yisrael. Bar kapara, the sage says, this is talking about Doeg. Doeg is the one who made the call on that and got him to, so it's sparing Agag, I should say, and the animals. But it's Doeg who got Shaul to do it. And that's why Shaul says, Yaresi es ha'am, I was afraid of him. Because he's this mighty Talmud Chacham, but he's also the Satan of Shaul. And then we get to source number 11, which Janine called already for us. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, when David is picked to be the musician for Shaul, and we said there, when we read that Gemara, that the person who suggests that David play music on behalf of Shaul plays up all sorts of traits of David that are completely, completely irrelevant. Right? He talks about, here, go back to chapter 16, sentence 8. We'll take a fast look at it. Hopefully it's still familiar. Chapter 16, sentence 8. I'm sorry, 16, not 16, 8. 16:18 is what I wanted. So when you look at that description that you get there, this is for a guy answering the wanted ad for a musician. He knows how to play. He is a gibor chayil. He's a man of war. He understands how to speak intelligently, and he is attractive, and God is with him. Like, I just needed a violinist. what is all this? So we gave different explanations at the time. We suggested that maybe these are all spiritual things. And we gave different explanations for what it could be about. But on one level, and this is what the Gemara is doing, it's that Doeg is trying to undermine David with Shaul by making Shaul jealous. That's the idea. He's trying to make Shaul jealous and nervous and vulnerable. Think like Haman with Ahasuerus, right? He's trying to undermine him. And then you get the Gemara with Doeg challenging the lineage of David, which we saw already above. So he is essentially dragging down Shaul. And I'll give you one last example for this in source number 12. Source number 12, Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah. Ksiv, we have a pasuk. Ta'abed dovrei chazav, ish damim mirma yisa'ev Hashem. God abhors somebody who is a person of blood, a person of trickery. And the Medrash says, medaber bedoeg v'achitofel. David is talking about Doeg and Achitofel. Dovrei chazav hein v'diburan. They are liars entirely. And then he says, Zehi tir gilui arayos ushfichas damim, v'zehi tir gilui arayos ushfichus damim. Each of them, Doeg and Achitofel, permitted immorality and bloodshed. So I'm skipping Achitofel's part here because it's not what we're learning right now. If we get to Shmuel Beis one day, we get to discuss Achitofel. But the part that relates to Doeg, Amar l'Shaul, he says to Shaul, v'chiyesh David. This is talking about, remember David was married to Michal? And then there's that whole falling out because Michal saves David's life. We didn't yet read it, But Shaul gives away Michal to somebody by the name of Palti ben Laish, as though she wasn't married to David. Who told him you could do that? So this Medrash says, yeah, that was Doeg. Amar l'Shaul, he said to Shaul, v'chiyesh ishus l'David. Does David have the ability to create marriage halachically? Halamori b'malchusu, he's a rebel against the throne. V'chashuv k'meis, he's viewed as though he was dead. V'achshav hitir kunato v'aso so zit vitus. These are terms which, according to the commentaries on the Medrash, he permitted his wife and made him, David, as though he is lacking. Uki'ilu humeis, as though he were dead, but damo mutar v'ishto mutares. His blood is permitted, his wife is permitted. The Amad Shaul v'nasan Michal eshes David alpiv l'palti ben Laish. And so Shaul gave away Michal to Palti ben Laish. That's its own story we have to come back to. Ushvichas damim, and murder also. Dichsiv, because we're going to see in the next chapter. V'lo avu avdei Shaul ha-melech l'shloach yad b'chol anei Hashem. Shaul first says to his servants, you heard what Doeg said, go kill the people of Nob. And they refuse. Abel Doeg hargan, but Doeg killed them. As we're going to see in the next parak. So what I'm getting at here is, he permitted, says the Medrash, he permitted immorality and he permitted bloodshed for Shaul. The job of Doeg, the role of Doeg, is to drag down Shaul. That's one way to look at him. Yes, Ruth.
Why? What was the reason?
Sorry? Why would he do it?
Yeah.
Power hungry? Make the king nervous? See what happens? Yeah. That's one approach. There's another approach. The other approach is that he is David's nemesis. It's not about Doeg and Shaul. It's about Doeg and David. And here we come back to the Edomi Admoni. We're going to see a specific source on it, God willing, next week. But take a look, please, at Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf Dalet Pasuk Tet, chapter 24, sentence 9. David, at this point, is speaking to Shaul, much later in our story, obviously. And David says to Shaul, Lama sishma es divrei adam lemor hinei David mevakesh ra'asecha. He says to Shaul, why are you listening to people who say to you, or to a specific person who says to you, that David wants to harm you? Who's he talking about? As Rashi says on that pasuk, Doeg. Doeg is the man who is looking to take down David. Either he's trying to take down Shaul, or he's trying to take down David. Your choice. Yes,
or both.
Or both, yes. And
could it be like Job? Remember the beginning of Job, the Satan?
Yes. So the answer is yes, and it'll fit with David, with Shaul later on in his career as well. He has a Satan too. There's a lot to say, so we're not getting through it today, obviously. But what I want to go with this is three reasons why he attacks David, and why he would be the rival to David. One of them will be jealousy. One of them will be mystical. And one of them will be a lesson that has nothing to do with Doeg, but rather has something to do with the way we learn Torah. So we're going to see a lot of big ideas here regarding Doeg. Last comment, Bonita.
My last comment is, if there's a theme of seizing the moment, that David's seizing the moment, here he did not seize the moment.
What would seizing the moment look like?
He has a sword, killed Doeg.
Oh my. That would be interesting.
That's what I wanted to do.
Got it. Well, that would have saved a lot of lives.
Can you repeat that, please?
Ethi, you want to say it again?
If Norman Doeg was against him.
Well, that we have to read what he said at the end of chapter 22. It's still not clear to me what he knows. But we have to resume with this, God willing, next week. So please be there. We got a lot to talk about. Thank you very much.